Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another hour of Tribal Wisdom. I am your host, Cynthia Williamson. Happy Wedding Wednesday. It is Wedding Wednesday, so we are talking about all things weddings, marriage, family, love, and so on and so on. Of course, it is Financial Literacy Month, so we are focusing on helping the family with their finances. This is a great topic because we get so many questions sent to us that I'm happy to be able to get some true professionals to help us answer them. So, since tonight we're going to be doing credit counseling and give credit where credit is due, we have the wonderful Tara Coquette, who has gratefully come on, or I'm grateful that she came on, I should say, to talk to us about this subject. This is the woman that you want to talk to, the credit woman. I'm not going to take too long to make too many announcements. We could do that at the end of the show. I'm going to bring her right in so that we can get started with give credit where credit is due. If you have any questions, please feel free to give us a call at 347-996-3160. Press the number 1 to let us know that you are on hold and that you'd like to ask a question, and we will gladly bring you in. Give us, you know, about a half an hour just to get the topic started if you do, and that way we can bring you in after we could possibly answer some questions for you. So, without further ado, we have Miss Tara Coquette. Tara, hey.
Hey, Cynthia. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Well, I love that March is Credit Education Month, and then mm-hmm. April is Financial Literacy Month. So mm-hmm. I get to talk everything about credit and money for a lot of days all at once.
Yes.
So it's a beautiful thing.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And you are the woman to talk to. You are called the credit woman.
Yes, I am. And mm-hmm. I try to stay in my realm of credit, but it always spills over that I know a little bit about the student loan issues, and I know a little bit about accounting and real estate and mortgages, because that's what credit affects.
Yes.
So, you know, I always ask people, just ask me a question. If I don't know, I'm the first one to tell you, I don't know, or I can't help you, because I know I can't help everyone. I mean, that's obvious. You cannot help everyone. But at least I can give you a truthful answer or lead you to someone who might be able to give you a better answer.
Great. Great opening.
Yeah. And that's about education. People really need to be educated on what they need to do.
Well, you know what? Then why don't we start with the term credit counseling? We are in Financial Literacy Month, but what is credit counseling?
I just had this conversation with some business associates today because they said, well, when I think of counseling, I think, I don't need any counseling. I need someone to fix my credit. And, and I said, well, you know, credit repair, even credit restoration, I really do counsel people because I want people to understand, number one, yes, you can do this yourself. So if you can, and I've had people come to me and said, with your advice, I have started fixing my credit, which is wonderful because, once again, you can do it yourself. But for me, counseling is a lot of times when people are in trouble with their money, something happens. So I feel like it really is a counseling you have to do in order to get back where you need to be. So I always say there are life storms that happen that no one's prepared for. I mean, regardless of how prepared you are, it is death, divorce, health issues, and underemployment. Any one of those five things can hit you so hard that where you were good before, you're now in the storm. And there's wreckage from the storm. And the
nice.
Wreckage is the credit score.
All right.
So
you know,
when you're in that, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, tell us that again. Death, divorce.
Health issues
mm-hmm.
and underemployment. Because you can have a job, but mm-hmm. if it's not enough money, you're still going to have the same issues. I mean, it's
yes.
not as, you know, you hear people say a job is just over broke. Well, for a lot of people, they can't qualify for anything because they just make enough money that they're not homeless or anything like that, but they can't make it to that next step, especially if you were before at a higher level. So one of the professions that was hit hard with the whole real estate crisis was mortgage brokers. And people had their own independent businesses. And when the market changed, when that CMB paper could not get mortgages anymore, all those people went out of business. And I know there were husband-wife teams out there because they were making a lot of money. I mean, it was a lot of money to be made. And then when it stopped, it was no money to be made, nothing at all. And that was that's a true crisis. Can you imagine two top earners all of a sudden not being able to bring in any money? That's not pretty.
Right. That could end up creating quite an issue for someone. I do remember watching something when I think it was a married couple. He was the main earner, and he lost his job, and they ended up going straight for the credit, you know, paying for everything with the credit card route. And trying to catch up with the credit cards, you know, spending the savings, spending whatever was coming in, because they had never really prepared first by putting together enough savings to be able to pay off their monthly bills. Is that something that you normally talk to people about, like the amount of savings that they should really kind of have in place?
Well, actually, it's almost like the horse has left the barn, and the whole savings piece is great if you could do it before, but so many people are in crisis. I don't talk about having that 6 months worth of savings. I talk about more about being very lean in how you live. So I'm all about when you do your spending plan, which is a budget, but a budget sounds like, you know, a diet, and a spending plan says I can eat what I want. But you have to choose what you want. Because I joke with people, and I say, in my spending plan, I pay for my electric because, hey, I like electricity. Because electricity, when you think about it, is not a basic necessity. Food, water, air, I actually put in love, are basic necessities. But we have gotten used to electricity, and so we want electricity. So I'm not going to be upset when I have to, okay, not kind, not upset, but I'm going to pay that bill because I like electricity. So you choose what you pay. That's all it is to it. You choose. Now, most people choose their utilities, but do I really need all that cable? Do I need the really high-priced cell bill? No, you can start choosing something different. And you might lose a little bit, but not enough that you feel you can't have anything.
So you would say that kind of doing your research in what you would put into your spending plan, how much money you would be spending for each utility or service makes a big difference.
Makes a big difference because some things you can't change. I mean, honestly, even with in Pennsylvania, they have the deregulation for electricity, but it's not like all of a sudden you're only going to pay 25% of what you were paying before. If you have a large house and your electric bill is big, you can save a couple hundred dollars a year, but you're not going to save $2,000 a year. That is really is a big line item, but it's still you want to save as much as possible on things that you can save. But it's really, most of the time I'm talking to people about someone might have a habit that they need to break. So I had one couple, and the wife admitted this. She says, it's not my husband, it's me. She went shopping every weekend. And you can't do that if you're trying to save because you can't use the credit cards.
Wow. Okay. And do you make them, like, cut them up or get rid of them?
No, because that's the other thing nowadays with credit. If you close an account, because you might say, I have 10 credit cards, obviously you don't need 10. But the issue nowadays is if you close an account, I tell people never close an account because that looks like you're in trouble. Even though you might be doing it for a very good reason, you have to keep the accounts open, keep them at 30% of whatever the balance is, or the credit limit, or keep them at zero if you have a lot of different credit cards. And then you really have to manage yourself. You really do. Now, you can always give them to your family member, okay, make sure they're not going to use it, of course.
Right.
Or put it somewhere where you can't find it, you know, quote, unquote, you can't find it. It's not easy to find. But you really have to manage yourself at this point. And that's why, yeah, I ask people four questions, and the fourth question is, what is your big why? Why do you want to do this? Because if your why is not big enough, no one can make you do it. It's very much like exercise. I was turning 40, and I said, I want to be fit at 40. So I hired a trainer. So I don't want to do what the trainer was telling me to do. That was hard. Guess what? It didn't matter. I hired a trainer. I wasn't willing to do the work. So I went a couple times, and then it was like, I don't want to do that. And guess what? I did not do it. So I tell people right from the beginning, you can't just pay someone to make you want to do this, to make you do the sacrifice. You're going to have to do the sacrifice yourself.
Well, then, and you know, Oh, that's typical.
Difficult. It is difficult because you're changing your mindset.
Okay, you really right. Well, I'm glad you say that because I think a lot of people don't recognize that it is a mindset change that has to happen first, because you can hire the counselor, you can do all of these other things, but if the way that you live your life doesn't change, you will still end up in the same type of financial trouble.
Exactly, exactly.
Well, is there a difference between a spending plan and a debt management plan?
Well, a spending plan is really what you would do on a month-to-month basis, and a debt management plan is more in specifically, every spending plan should have a debt management plan if you have debt, but not everyone has debt. So let's just say if you have, and I talk to people about this all the time, that if you have $5,000 worth of debt, but you only have $200 a month to put towards that debt, you know it's going to take you some time to pay that off because you don't have a lot of money to put towards it. However, you can still create that plan, and it might take you years because now you're looking at most people, if they have a 9-to-5 job, they're going to have that third pay at some point, and it feels like, I remember when I had my 9-to-5, oh, man, free money, free money. It's nothing free.
Right.
You would have to take that salary and, like, really just put it towards your debt management plan or your income tax return or, you know, take a part-time job. Whatever the thing might be, when you have that debt management plan, you need to really focus on reducing your debt. And, you know, everyone, you know, they ask, should I do the highest balance, the one with the lowest interest rate? There's, for me, it's really just your personality. I myself like to see things come down. So if I had one at 500, another at 1,000, and another at 1,500, the 500, I would still pay the minimum balance. For me, I'm not talking about anything based on numbers, but for me, I'd want to see that $1,500 one go down. So the other two would be minimum balances, and I'd be hitting that $1,500 because I'm going to feel better by getting that under four digits.
Okay.
So I always tell people, just do what feels good for you.
And if we're focusing on reducing our debt, one of the things you just mentioned is a part-time job. What are some other things that could be done that you could put into your debt management plan and process to start bringing that debt down?
Well, always looking at your spending plan, because usually people can find whether it's in their bill or in their phone plan. Honestly, I found about $150 in my own spending plan, and this is with me telling everybody else what to do. Blah, 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 physician, heal thyself, you know, because I felt, I need my cable. I don't go and do anything. And what I found was, of course, a lot of times with cable, you get these great offers, and they're only for a year, and they can really count on people not looking at it within a year, because a year sounds like a long time, and then the last time you looked at it was two years or 3 months ago. That they slowly but surely go up from that $99 plan to where I was spending $170. And I'm like, for what? For who? For what?
Right.
And then what happened when I said, look, I can't do this, then they can find other plans for you. But
right.
They're not going to find it for you until you call and ask. So I went from $170 to
$80. Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay, so part of it is actually reevaluating your spending plan, looking at the things that you're spending on and finding a better plan for yourself, a better plan with the utilities or services that you're using.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Wonderful. And then one of the things I really encourage people to look into is everyone has a talent that they do really just very, very well. Find your talent. And I joke with people and say, it might be you paint the best big toes in the world. That's mm-hmm. kind of facetious, but that's what I'm saying. It's your talent. Find your talent. You can make money doing that. So mm-hmm. a lot of times it's people doing dinners. People will support you just because it's you and because mm-hmm. you cook great. And it might be just that little bit. A lot of times the people could just make $200 to $300 more in a month. They could do something with that. They don't need $3,000. They need that small bit of money to make it work for them.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to be committed to what you say you want to do. So I really like using vision boards. I've been doing a vision board for probably the last 6 years. And it makes you focus on what do you really want. And also having an accountability partner. So you're going to have to make changes. If you and your best girlfriend always went shopping every other Saturday, that's not the person you need to be around right now. You need to be around the person that says, let's look in your wardrobe and come up with a different look, and maybe you can buy a $10 scarf that makes that look pop,
mm-hmm.
but you don't have to go get a whole new wardrobe. Or start, I have a very good friend. I will go to her closet because she has all the clothes in the world and find something and borrow it, wear it, and take it back. And it's a wonderful thing because in that way you're spending no money.
Right.
Not at all.
Right. I definitely
think that people have to do differently. Just think differently about it.
Okay. Think differently and do things differently. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I know one of my girlfriends is always on. Is it Groupon or there's something that she always goes to
mm-hmm.
and she gets these great coupons and we like going out to eat.
Yeah.
But we do pick restaurants that are economical. Or she'll
mm-hmm.
find just the right coupon where we get to spend no more than $10 between the two of us.
Wow.
Right. At a place. Right. So I definitely understand what you mean by that. Like, think differently about how you're spending your money and start looking up services that can help you with your plan without reducing the things that you enjoy doing.
Right. And let me tell you, just for that friend that you're talking about, I have said this to people who always seem to know everything. I said, you could do a newsletter. You could charge people $50 for the year, and I'm going to tell you about discounts, and they will save hundreds of dollars. But you could probably get 50 people on there and make a quick amount of money to pay off a bill just doing that because it's people who, I mean, they just know where all the sales are. They know the best. They know everything. And I'm like, how the heck do you do this? I've been telling people, do a newsletter. You know the information anyway, or even an email blast to say, go here. This is the best place. They're having a sale on this. And people would pay for that because they would still save money. You
mm-hmm.
make it very economical, but you make it that, you know, if I can save $10 and I'm paying you $50, yeah, or actually I probably could save more like a couple hundred dollars with all the different savings they have. People want information, and we're overloaded with information that doesn't really do us well.
Mm-hmm.
But if you could have information that really saves you money, and that's a talent. I see it all the time, but people, they don't think of it in that way. But I'm like, if I had that talent, I would have a newsletter. I really would.
Nice.
People say, that's the newsletter you have to get out. I would give a code out every time.
Very nice.
You need
Very
the code
nice.
In order to get it so that, you know, I'm still going to get paid. And it's, I know this will work. It's just amazing. There's so many things that people can do that have true talent that would really work. So just think about it. I always want people to think about, oh, yeah, I could do that. You just never know.
Mm.
And once again, it's not to replace any income, but it's to help you get out of a situation.
Great. Now, we do have a caller on the line, but I just want to ask you one more question before we bring the caller in, because
sure.
I want to talk about judgments, you know, what, you know, the difference between judgment and all of these different things. But let's start with the very first thing about what it means to establish credit. How do you establish credit? I remember when I first moved out on my own, I moved down south, and I was looking for places to live, And it wasn't that I had bad credit, because every time they say you have no credit, I felt like they were telling me I had bad credit. And I said, I can't. I haven't done anything. And they said, No. There's a difference between having no credit and having bad credit. Not that either one will help you, but
right.
there's a difference. So can we just touch on establishing credit for a moment and what it means to have no credit or the difference between no credit and bad credit?
Okay, so I would say to anyone, and especially young people, you don't want to go with the offers that come in the mail because they really go after people who don't have any credit, and they always think you're trying to reestablish credit when they don't see any credit. And it's better to go to your financial institution and either get a secure credit card, and what that means is you're giving them money for the privilege of them giving you a credit card. But if you do something like that for 6 months, you will start getting credit offers. And it's very important for you to look at the offers and find out what kind of fees they have associated with it, if it's an annual fee, if you're late one time, if it goes from a 6% interest rate to a 26% interest rate. These are all the things that you really have to look at. But most financial institutions now and credit unions will give you a secure credit card. The problem that we're in nowadays is before people used to be able to go out and get a small credit card for a couple hundred dollars, even if you didn't have any credit. But because so many people have gone through a crisis, they're not doing that. You have to do a secure credit card 9 times out of 10 just to get started.
All right.
And having – that's the no credit. And it holds against you as if you had bad credit, even though they don't. You don't have bad credit, but they can't judge you.
Mm-hmm.
With bad credit, you would do the same thing, but the most important thing with that is you're reestablishing credit. But when you have poor credit, you have to establish the new credit, but you still have to go back and clean up that old stuff,
mm-hmm.
because to establish new credit is great, but if you still have the same mess on the credit report, they're still going to look at you and say, so what are you going to do about this other stuff?
Right.
So it's for people with bad credit, they have to go back and go forward. And for people with, I call it virgin credit, you just move forward. And you do it slowly but surely. I always say you should have at least 3 trade lines on your credit report, but you can do, you know, depending on how much money you have and how much you want to save. My daughter and son-in-law, they pretty much did theirs all at once in 1 month. They just took all their monies and got secured credit cards for them. And now, you know, they're establishing credit. They're probably in their 3rd, 4th month of establishing good credit. And
nice.
People need to do this as soon as possible, because part of your credit scoring is the length of time. So whether you're 18 or 28, it's all about time. Or 48, it's about time. They need to see that you've been paying this bill on time.
Okay. Don't get too close. Don't get too deep into what is part of your score, because we're definitely going to discuss that in the second half of the show. I don't want to get too far ahead. If you're just tuning in, we are talking with the credit woman, Tara Colquette, and we are discussing credit counseling, the difference between no credit and bad credit. We talked about the things to help you establish good credit and a number of other things. Now, I see we have a caller on the line. I'm going to bring you in. Please feel free to ask a question of our guest, and let's see if we can help you out with something. You are on the air with Tribal Wisdom.
Is it me?
It's you.
Oh, good evening, Tara. Cynthia, how are you guys doing tonight?
Good. How are you?
Good. Thank you.
I know this is a little bit off the subject, but it has to do with credit. I want to dismiss a myth. I mean, you know, you would get all these helpful advice from friends and family about that 7-year thing that, you know, you can mm-hmm. call them and they have to take it off or something like that. What really happens with that?
Well, the best thing you can do is the law is, at the time that the collection begins, there's 7.5 years that it has to stay on your credit report unless you settle. Well, even if you settle, it's 7.5 years because it's a mark of what happened. I always say your credit report is like a report card. So say if you can't pay something and it's not a judgment, because a judgment stays on for 10 years, it's going to stay on your credit report for 7.5 years. What I say to people is that sometimes you have to live through whatever the mess is. I mean, divorce and death will any of those life issues will sometimes cause such havoc that people can't do anything until the 7.5 years is up. However, the easiest way for you to know exactly what's going on on your credit report is to pull your free TransUnion report from annualcreditreport.com. And that's the free one, annualcreditreport.com. You can get it once a year for free. It doesn't give you scores. But I joke with people and say you don't need a score to know if something is good or bad. You can look at it, and it'll tell you these are adverse accounts and these are your positive accounts. But it will also give you very clearly for you to read exactly when items are going to come off your credit report. So it'll give you the month and the year. So if something's coming off in June of 2014, you should check in July of 2014 to make sure it's not on there. Okay?
Okay. Even if it came off your report, Ken, like if – I know I have – sometimes I have these people calling me about things that I paid off or settled with another, you know, third party, like kind of thing. And they call you and says, well, we're taking over the collections for this. How do you really handle these people? Because half the time you don't even know, you know, who you're paying or, you know, what it's referring to. They don't have the information or you don't have the information anymore. How do you handle this?
Well, first of all, you always want them to verify the debt. So anytime I tell people it's really difficult, but you have to keep very good records when you start paying people, because then you won't know whether it's quote-unquote zombie debt that comes back, and you're like, wait a minute, I paid that 3 years ago. But if you can't prove it and they keep on coming after you, and sometimes they don't even have the documentation either, you're going to have a fight on your hands. So then you have to fight via writing, and that takes a long time, especially if you've already paid it. That takes a long time for you to dispute it. So it's best to keep very, very good records. And you always ask people for verification, because nowadays I tell people, I'm not the company that says, oh, let me write this and see if it'll come off your credit report. That's not what I do. What I do is I say, you need to dispute this or you need to settle this. If it's wrong, it's wrong. It'll come off. And if it's right, then you have to do something different.
Okay. Great. Well, I do appreciate your time, and you guys gave me some great information tonight. And, again, keep up the good work, you guys.
Thank you. Thank you for calling in.
Goodbye now.
All right. Wonderful, wonderful. I'm so glad that we were able to help that caller with her questions. And if you're just tuning in, she was asking about a judgment, the difference between a judgment and what was she asking about? Because you said it wasn't a judgment that comes off in 7.5 years. It's a dispute?
It's when it's a collection or a charge-off account. So if you have an account, a Visa card, and you can't pay it for whatever reason, it goes on your credit report. They will try to collect it from you, and then they will sell it to someone else, to a collection company. Mm-hmm. And then the collection company, this sometimes happens, people will see on their credit report, they'll see their Visa card, then they'll see ABC collection company, and then it'll be sold to XYZ collection company.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's really one item on your credit report. They can't keep on reporting the same debt over and over again, but you have to go to the original holder of your account no longer has the debt. You have to settle it with the third party.
Mm-hmm.
But what you also want to do is when if it's showing more than once, you want to go back to those other ones and say, hey, this has been settled. And
mm-hmm.
so it won't keep on showing as a collection or a charge off account. And that's where a lot of times when my clients are people who say, I can't deal with that. It's too much because it's overwhelming. It's overwhelming not so much of the work, but the emotional basis behind it. So if it was when you were really sick and you're like, I can't believe, you know, the hospital, they knew I wasn't working and I was sick, and this is an actual client I have, and they said they would, you know, give them a charity case and they would reduce the bill.
Mm-hmm.
But they wanted him to pay it while he was in the hospital. He's like, I'm in the hospital. Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
And sometimes it's like, are you really trying to help? Because he's like, you know, now showing on his credit report, he says, but they told me that they would, you know, reduce the bill because I didn't have a job. Of course, this is before Obamacare. And so, you know, he's really upset because he's like, I don't believe these people. And then he went to try to correct it, and, of course, it wasn't corrected. You know, so he's now, he has a job, thank goodness, and he's really looking to settle it because he just wants to get it done. Because, you know, he has a job and he's back on his feet and everything is okay. But it's so hard when people really were not given good information or it's just not, quote-unquote, fair. So I always, you know, I see these situations all the time. And sometimes it's easy to dispute them and sometimes it's, you know, you're going to wait the time period or you're going to settle. It's sometimes it's just your choice.
It definitely, I can say that one thing, and I'm still not even sure it's even off my credit report. I had a not a judgment, but I guess a collection for an AT&T phone, which I never had. Never had AT&T as a company, nothing. And when I called, it was before I was trying to purchase a home, and I called them, and they kept saying, it's yours, and I said, no, I kept sending disputes. I don't know what they do or how they do it, but they convinced the company, TransUnion, and all the other companies that it belonged to me. And I said, this is absolutely crazy. I called AT&T, and, of course, the first thing they do is they ask you for your Social Security number. They ask you for all these things. Mm-hmm. And I gave it to them, and they said, well, no, we can't even – you were never in the system. If we can't even put your Social Security number in, you were never in the system. And I said, then how are these individuals – do you have, like, a sister company or some other company, you know, that would have my name? I said, because I've never been with you guys. They said, yeah, we know that. And I said, well, then could you please send me a letter? They said, oh, well, no, we're not allowed to do that. Which
I've heard that. I've heard that so many times. They won't do anything, but they also will say, we can't find you either. So, unfortunately, in you know, when you're dealing with credit and the credit bureaus, you are guilty until you prove yourself innocent. So then it usually will show up that someone has disputed the charge on your credit report and, like, you're not in agreement with the findings. That does not mean that, okay, you don't have to do anything about it. But it's showing what happened. And that's really hard because I have another type of letter I send out that's much more forcible than it's just not mine type of thing, where I actually ask for, by law, some very detailed information. And if it's really not yours, and I always tell people, I don't want to dispute something that's facetious. I want it to be real, that, you know, I'll dispute it and I'll win it. Just because I know they won't be able to prove this, because if it's not yours, there's no way someone can make it up that it's yours. But it's not easy, because one of the first things they do is they just don't answer. You got to send it all 3-4 times. You got to have certified mail and all this kind of stuff. And it's once again, I can kind of laugh about it, but it's not funny at all, because the other person is holding up what they're trying to do. But you have to be very forceful. You have to, you know, follow up. And make it a mission, not impossible, but you have to follow up and just keep at it.
I sent monthly letters, and I believe that it's actually still there for some reason. I'm like, you people are nuts. And it was how I found out about something called zombie debt.
Yes, the zombie debt. That's exactly it. They will come back. The worst I've seen was in the late 90s. I saw someone that had something from on the credit report from 1979. I said, that is so far out of anything you could possibly think of. Even good credit doesn't stay on for that long. So how could bad credit do that? So it was really kind of interesting that, you know, they didn't know. They were like, I don't even know what this is. It's 20 years ago, you know. It was absolutely ridiculous. But you just have to be very tenacious about it.
I guess I have to get back on it because in fact, I need to check my credit report again now that we're talking about this. I need to check my own credit report again and see if it's still there, because there was, you know, you get to a point where you kind of feel almost helpless with the whole thing because you've gotten word from the company that they claim your debt was, where they claim it was, and they're telling you, no, you never had any debt with us. We don't even know who you are. Yeah. And this company, they're just, unscrupulous is what I'm getting, because that's what I also heard about individuals who purchase zombie debt. They're just like, what I've heard is they watch you cleaning up your debt. They actually watch for people who are cleaning up their debt, and when the debt is almost clean, they put this judgment on for a small amount. It's never a huge amount. It's usually for $50, like $25 to $150, because they know that whatever it is that you're doing, you just want it off.
Exactly.
So
I've seen that happen to people. Yes, it definitely does.
Right.
But you have to know your rights by law, that they really can't do that, because now they have to prove it. And once again, by law, you could only keep it on for a certain amount of time. Then it's kind of your get-out-of-jail-free card, that they can't keep it on forever. Now, the only thing that, of course, does not abide by that is federal. So taxes, student loan, or child support will follow you to death. That does not go away.
Well, I expect that, because they most likely have a way of proving that it belongs to you.
Yes.
So that I would never worry about. You know, thank goodness it's not something that I have to deal with. But knowing, like I said, when I found out about this zombie debt and these characters that do these things, I was just like, are you kidding me? You know, it's something to deal with. But, okay, we're definitely going to get back into, you know, the collection process, the difference between collection and a judgment. But first, let's talk about the parts of or the things that make up your score.
Yes. So 35% of your score is just paying your bills on time. It sounds simple, but that's where people actually get into a lot of trouble, because this is going back to your spending plan. If you don't know what your relationship is with your money, and you're kind of haphazard about it, you're like, oh, they get paid when I get paid. Best way to think about it, the bill does get paid, but now it's reporting on your credit report as a 30-day late. And that is the most havoc you can have in your credit now, because no one can do anything with a 30-day late. It's just 30 days late. There's no negotiating with companies. Used to, well, maybe if you had a relationship with a company for 5-6 years and you were late and you were in the hospital and you can prove it, they might take it off. But they don't do that anymore. Now they're like, you're 30 days late, you're in trouble. Everything now is so sensitive that they're not giving people any leeway. So I tell people, the most important thing you can do to improve your credit is to pay your bills on time. Period. Just pay them on time. A lot of people have issues with that.
Well, yeah, I bet, especially, like you said, with the way that the economy is, the things that people are doing, you get so busy that you forget. I am absolutely guilty of forgetting sometimes, and I'm so grateful when they call me before the 30 days and let me know. And I love to surprise them, because I think that they're so used to either not getting to the person or getting told off or something that, you know, when I pick up and they go, oh, you know, you're this and that, I'll go, oh, okay, I'm so sorry, let me give you a payment now. And I go, what? You know,
exactly. But I would say
laugh.
For you, what you really want to do is set up automatic pays, so you can take yourself out of this equation. And I also tell people, when you're starting back and you know everything is fine with your money, it is now April. April money should be paying May bills, so you can't even get into 30 days late. You always want to be a month ahead of it, and you can set up a dedicated account for your bill pay, whatever it is that you have to do to make sure you don't get that 30-day late. Because literally, I talk to my mortgage people and underwriters. They don't want to – you have a 30-day late, they want 12 months of no late. And so one late can put you so far back in your process that it's another year. You literally
now,
have to wait another year.
Say that again. Who is looking for 12 months of no latenesses?
If you are looking to purchase a home, and so most of the people I talk to are looking to get a mortgage, and you cannot have any 30-day late on your credit report, not one. A few years ago, you could have one, maybe even two 30-day late if everything else was okay and it was caught up. Now they don't want to see any 30-day late. Because there's, and please note, like you said, you have been called, and it's like you didn't go into 30 day late. You were late, but not 30 days.
Right.
A 30 day late means you're in trouble. You can't pay the bill.
Right.
And when they see that, they want no part of anyone who can't pay a bill trying to get a mortgage. And they make you wait 1 year of not having any latenesses at all. That's a long time.
Yep.
That's a long time because you can make a mistake.
Yep.
And it's a major mistake. And I get people every once in a while, well, how can I get around this? I'm the credit woman. I'm not the magical woman. That's the rule. I live within rules, too. I can't make them do that. There's no underwriter I know that will press a magic button and say, don't worry about that. Nope.
Wow. All right, so 35% of it is paying bills on time. Next.
Right. 30% is how long you have had the charge account or the history. So your history, this is why I tell people you need to start now. Like even when I have clients that first start, I'll actually tell them, depending on what they need to do, it's better to start with establishing good credit than to pay off something first because they need the time. They need that time to start, that clock to start right away.
Mm-hmm.
And so because it's not enough to clear up just your bad credit, you have to do something so they know that you're out of your storm and that you will pay your bills on time.
Love it. Next.
Right. Now, please note, two together, you still fail. Okay? You still have only 65%. It's still a failing grade. So you need...
Yeah.
A mix of credit. That's probably the hardest thing to do when people are establishing credit or any type, whether it's from new credit or you had poor credit and you're trying to rebuild. Because you don't really have a mix of credit. No one's going to say, oh, we're going to give you, well, they will give you an automobile, but sometimes the interest rates are so high. I'm like, you don't want that automobile payment.
Right.
But usually you can just get a credit card. But as you rebuild, you might be able to get like a secured loan also. That's more money. That's usually $500 to $1,000. While a secured credit card is anywhere from $200 to $400. But at least start with the mix of credit. It's 10% of your credit score, but it's something. Okay?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Then we're talking about why am I drawing a blank with something I've looked at 5,800 times. So it's, I'm telling you, it's like I'm totally blanked on this. So I will go around that, but it's another 25%, and I will remember it, and I will break into our conversation and go, yeah. And the next one is, and if I was at my laptop, which I'm not, I would
right.
just Google it. But it's another 25%, and I cannot for the life
okay.
of me.
That's okay because
I'm unbelievable.
I want to step back. 10% is the mix of type of credit that you have, a mix of
yeah.
credit? Okay,
yeah,
so
the type
I want
of credit.
Is the mix
yeah.
of credit. That's okay. We will come away from this conversation because, like you said,
yeah.
it's not going to come to you until we get deep into something else. So,
exactly.
let's go straight into that deep of something else and talk about the differences, the real differences between a collection company and a judgment.
Now, a judgment is really pretty serious because that means you have been taken to court.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times what never happened before except in recent times that if you had an unsecured debt, that's a credit card.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing secured about that at all. They said, oh, your credit looks okay. You got a job. Here it is. And remember, there were credit limits of $10,000, $15,000, $20,000. They were giving away everything because it was a don't worry, be happy atmosphere out there. They are now taking people to court for not just $20,000, but for $3,000, $5,000, and that never happened before. But once you have a judgment, it instead of the 7.5 years, it takes 10 years for a judgment to come off. And most places, if you have a judgment, you won't be able to get an apartment, sometimes a job. You know, judgments are a very hard strike against you, very hard, because now you've been taken to court. It's much different than, oh, well, you know, I couldn't pay that credit card or that phone bill or whatever it is. When you go to court, that's a much harder place. Now, I always tell people usually how they get in trouble. And usually you see court judgments from apartments, lawsuits, or in, like, accidents, things like that. You never saw it on credit cards. I had someone who was not a client that I just gave her some advice. I said, go to court. State your case. It's not that you're right, but you're not wrong either. She didn't have employment. And she went there, and they were like, can you pay us $20 a month? She says, yeah, I can pay you $20 a month. She says, okay, we'll, instead of her owing $3,000, they're like, you know, we pay $500. It was going to take her years at $20 a month to pay $500. But she went into that, and she just thought, she said, that's better than me having a judgment on my credit report.
Mm-hmm.
Because now she's in a payment plan. Mm-hmm. Because they want you to pay something. And so I always say to people, morally, if you have something, go and answer the phone. Go to court. Say what you need to say, because they know so many people have gone through this. Just like you said, when they call you and you're like, oh, let me pay that right now. Oh, my goodness. Oh, thanks. Because they're not used to people doing that.
Right. They were really surprised. And, like, by the end of the conversation,
yeah,
both of us were laughing and having a great conversation. And
mm-hmm.
She was pleasantly surprised, because I said, no, I'm actually very grateful for you guys. I know that you guys catch a lot of flack, but I'm grateful that you call me, because it just so happens that as a busy person, I
yeah.
will forget. There was just a couple of months ago, I had a serious iron deficiency, so I didn't remember things. I was just passing
yeah.
out, falling asleep. You know what I mean? There was so many things going
right.
on. And even when they were calling me, I wasn't even conscious. So
yes,
by the time they actually got to me, and I was like, oh, my gosh, I really do apologize. Let's take care of that right now. As a matter of fact, tell me how much, you know, there's left on it, because I want to just go ahead and make a plan to get this done and over with, so you don't have to call me anymore.
Exactly.
And they were just like, really? You know, the young lady was like, wow. And she was like, you were just so nice. And I was like, well, I would ask you, what did you expect? But you might answer me. So,
right.
you know.
They've heard it all. They have heard it all, I'm sure.
Right. I said, well, you know, I'm glad to be one to say that I'm grateful for you. Thank you for doing what you do. I really appreciate it. And, you know, just keep up the good work. And now I'm sure that they're hoping that I actually continue to mess up so they could call me again. And
they have plenty of people to call, so it's okay. They don't really want to call you again. But
no,
also, just being
pleasant.
Proactive does so much in helping you get through this, because it's always a point. I went through a divorce. I went through my own life issue, and I was not used to any creditors calling me, so it took me a lot. This was before I was even the credit woman. I was just a regular consumer going, ah. And I remember when I finally started coming out of it to just say, you know, I'm going to answer them. No, I don't have it. Okay? No, I don't have it. And this one gentleman would call me over and over and over again, you know, once or twice a month. And I'll always say, hi, Phil, yes, no, I don't have it. And finally, he got to the point, because I was always pleasant, always answered the phone, knew it was him because I saved his number. And he says, well, you know what, you have a really good attitude, because, you know, this is not life or death. I was like, oh, my goodness, finally a human being behind the collection process.
Right.
But it's very difficult. And what I always talk to people about counseling is, because most people, they don't go into this willy-nilly, something happened, and the counseling is for you to feel strong enough to be able to face your situation and come up with a plan. And sometimes the plan is, I can't do this.
Right.
It really is a mess. And I tell people, it's okay, because it's not cancer.
Right.
It's poor credit. It's
right.
not what you wish for. But there's a lot worse things out there. So what do? You go to you make sure your health is good, that your children's health is good, that you have a place to stay, and you really kind of, you have to take that away from you. And I always tell people, it's not about you. It's the situation you're in.
Mm-hmm.
And at the worst, 10 years from now, that situation will be over at the very worst, unless it's federal student loan or child support. But in 10 years, the very worst is going to be over. And live your best life then. And you can be rebuilding even if you can't go backwards.
Wow.
Because sometimes the debt is so hard, you can't. I've had people who had businesses, and they went bust during all this bad stuff. $200,000 you owe. Oh, no. Mm-mm. You don't have $200,000 to pay to someone.
Mm-hmm.
The business went bust.
We only have like 10 minutes left, and we haven't really touched on all the stuff, you know?
I could talk about credit all day long. I mean, people actually go, okay, you really get into this. Yes, I do.
Yeah,
I really do. I love it. I love it because it's so much.
So
and everyone
glad.
is so different. Every situation is different. So my whole point of talking to people is, you know, I have my normal pre-qualifications, and you have to have income, you have to have a written spending plan, you can't have the three big no's, student loans, child support, and taxes, and your why has to be really big, but everyone's situation is different. So what I get into is what is the blueprint for you as opposed to what fits for everyone, because it doesn't fit for everyone. It just doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A spending plan, the plan has to fit you.
It has to fit you.
Mm-hmm. I love it. I mean, you're dropping lots of stuff today.
You should
love
do it yourself. But mm-hmm. I just joined the gym last week because I wasn't doing it myself. I kept saying, oh, I'll walk outside, the weather's getting nice, and I'll do my yoga. Mm-hmm.
No.
I go to the gym now. I tell the truth. Shame everything else. I'm telling the truth. If you need help, get help. I always tell people, focus on the goal, not how you get there. Goal,
nice.
I'm goal-oriented,
mm-hmm.
and then you'll be fine. You'll just be fine.
Okay. All right. So we talked about the difference between collection agencies, how they handle things. It's on your credit report for 7.5 years, and a
mm-hmm.
judgment, which is on your report for 10 years, and that's
yes.
because you were basically taken to court.
Yes.
And you did say that sometimes you advise people just to go ahead to court because you can talk to them about your situation and so that you can put a human face to the situation and they can really try and help you out.
Right. But this is the thing, too. Even once you settle something that's derogatory on your credit report, whether it's a collection, judgment, or charge-off, it starts aging out. Even though it stays on your credit report, and I'm always going to speak about mortgage companies, if a mortgage company sees something on your credit report and is settled, even though they can still see it, they're going to say, okay, you took care of the debt, because anyone can get into a problem. It's whether you get yourself out of the situation
mm-hmm.
that matters. And then the real test is the FICO score has to go up in order for you to qualify. So now everything is number driven. You can't have any negative items on your credit report and outstanding negative items, but the score, it takes time to heal from that. So that's the time factor to it also. So if you settle something last month, it might take 3 to 4 months for your credit score to go up enough for it to show that. And I had someone whose credit score was right on the edge. I mean, she needed 2 points. And weren't they going to wait for those 2 points? Yes, they were. We were going to wait for it to go up. I talk to clients all the time. I'm like, do anything about it. I promise it's going to go up. It's going to go up. I can't tell you when, but it's going to go up. And then when they hit, you know, that beautiful number, they're like, oh, goodness, that took forever. But that's why I tell people you have to start now. It's now.
Well,
as soon as you start, because you can't get past the time. The time is the time.
Since you started talking about the FICO score, we really didn't define it and talk about that. Let's do that. What is the FICO score? How is it different from your actual credit score? And how does it continue to increase?
Okay, so your FICO score is your Fair Isaac. I actually did something about the history of that in the Credit Education Month. There was two gentlemen, something Fair and something Isaac. I don't remember their first names.
I'll go find
them
later on.
Right, they came up with this system. It's on my fan page on Facebook, but they came up with this system of how to monitor how people pay, and it started in the 50s. So now, you know, 60, 70 years later, this is the scoring system that everyone is using in order to judge who you are on a financial basis. Now, interestingly enough, about 6 years ago, you have three credit bureaus, TransUnion, Equifax, and Experian. They were like, we don't need a Fair Isaac. We can do this ourselves. And it's been a kind of war with another model called Vantage Score that is trying to come in, the one that's used, I'd say, 99.99% of the time. The Vantage Score is probably going to come in probably in the next decade or so. They're going to start using that, too, because they're really trying to get out the middleman. You know, they want to make more money.
Right.
So FICO scores are 350 to 850. I've never seen anything under 400, honestly. Mm-hmm. And under 500 is pretty bad. So those low, low ranges, I rarely see. Sometimes I see high 400s. But most people are somewhere in between 500 and 600 that has credit issues, somewhere in there. Because most mortgage companies are looking for a 620 or 640 credit score.
Mm-hmm.
When you have something under 600, you have some latencies on there, you have some collection accounts, you have things that are not good, and you need to take care of those. And they're not going to get better until you take care of those. I tell people all the time. I've actually had people who had even higher scores but still something on their credit report that will stop the underwriter from moving forward, and you have to take care of that. So when you talk about a credit score versus a FICO score, they're the same thing. You're going to
okay.
be judged on that FICO score. And if they're using it now for employment. They're using it now. I remember the first time I heard on, I think it was the Michael Bezos show, when you know, someone was on saying, yeah, check his credit reports. I'm like, oh, my goodness. It's not hard enough to find someone to love. Now we have to check their credit reports again. Yeah, it's too many criteria out here now. But
it's
of course,
serious, though. It's very
it's
serious.
It's very important.
Yes,
yeah, because
well,
that really tells you an indication of who the person is and how they feel about money. It
yes.
really is.
Yes,
so,
I've been posting situations daily,
yes.
and the responses that I get on those situations, some people are really harsh. They're like, no.
I was like, no, you cannot be. I wouldn't even marry that person. No, I wouldn't even date that person. I'm like, wow.
Exactly.
I mean, these are people that they love, too. I'm like, okay, this is pretty serious.
It is serious. I mean, and to
yeah.
me, it just kind of shows the different experiences people have gone through with money.
Yes.
Their responses are telling me what they've been through with money and that they either just do not want to go through it again.
Yes.
You know, because when you work so hard, when you put that amount of investment into anything or anyone,
mm-hmm.
and it turns around and kind of hurts you, you're doing your best to make sure it doesn't happen again.
It doesn't happen again.
Right.
And I think it's very important that people have that serious conversation. It shouldn't be on the first date, but just like you want to know if you want children, you want to make sure the other person wants children too before you get too deep into it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just talking about what's important to you. And I think people can go into a relationship if there are issues and the person wants to work them out.
Mm-hmm.
If the person doesn't want to work them out, then you're at odds. It's like if you wanted to have children, if someone says, I want children, and the other person doesn't, how is that going to pan out in the end? Not
right.
well. Okay? So
you know
if you
what?
Have, and unfortunately, I see this a lot of times with men and women,
mm-hmm.
where one person in the couple wants to move forward and the other person doesn't.
Right.
And literally, I have seen people break up, or I've seen people not communicate with me anymore because they're kind of going with the person who doesn't want to do anything. And what can
no.
you do?
Right. Tara,
you know?
Stop for a second because I have to tell anyone, if you're listening on the Internet, you're going to be cut off in the next 30 seconds. If you want to hear the rest of this conversation, because the next question is about who is responsible for debts after divorce, you need to call 347-996-3160. If you're on the Internet, you're going to miss the rest of the show. You can listen to the archives. But if you want to listen to the rest of the show, call in now, 347-996-3160. 3160 to hear the rest of this interesting conversation about what happens with debt after divorce, because this was a question that was sent to me, and I know that it's going to be a deep one. So speaking of the differences and people being kind of hurt after finding out, you know, you felt like you wasted your time, you felt like your time was wasted. And you get into a situation, and like I said, I've been posting kind of situations that people find things out after marriage, like the fact that they feel obligated to continue to give their parents money, even if the parent doesn't even need it, and that means that you're sacrificing your own family. There's so many different situations. But
exactly, yes.
Let's say something happens and it doesn't work out, and now you are faced with a divorce, past separation into divorce. Who is responsible for the debt that you accrued together?
It really will be split 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very important that people know financially exactly what's existing. And honestly, I never bought this until I went through my own divorce. You need a good attorney.
Mm-hmm.
That's all there is to it. Because the attorney will root out who had what and who's responsible for what, and more importantly, who financially can carry the debt. Because I admit, mm-hmm. I have a debt that's on me that's from the business, and I'm like, I can't pay that. It's a business debt, not a
mm-hmm.
personal debt. It's a business debt.
Mm-hmm.
I shall have to wait because, as one of my cousins told me, the person you marry is not the person you divorce. So it's not going to be pretty. I've seen one or two divorces where the people were not crazy, but someone usually goes crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You have to take it
emotions.
To the legal area. Yeah.
Yeah, emotions get involved
emotion.
And people forget themselves, and they want people to pay, and they're angry and all of these other different things.
Yeah.
So, I've seen some ugly situations, and I'm like, are you serious? This woman was a stay-at-home wife and mom, and you still want to give her 50% of the debt that was accrued?
Mm-hmm.
And some people still can't believe that in this day and age that there are stay-at-home moms and wives who know nothing about the family finances.
Yeah.
I find this so often in some of the work that I do. And although it's shocking, it's more sad to me because what happens is they're not aware of the benefits like life insurance, which we're going to be talking about next week. I want to get into life insurance and understanding why you really need to stay on top of beneficiaries and things of that nature.
Oh, my goodness. I have a story. I will definitely call in. It's not my story, but it's someone else's story, but I will call in.
Please.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, we both have stories, trust me.
Yeah.
The reason why it's a subject that I am impelled, it's imperative that we talk about it, because some of the things that I've seen happen, I'm just like, you've got to be kidding me. You cannot forget to take your first wife off of your life insurance because, you know, for life insurance, there's no changing the beneficiaries. There are certain things that are mandated to your
mm-hmm.
existing wife, even if you have an old beneficiary on there. But for certain other things, whoever is on there as the beneficiary, they will be receiving that benefit. And there's nothing that you can do to fight it.
Nothing.
And when I tell you that they will bring that fight to my office, to my desk, and I'm like, no. You need to visit the grave, ma'am, or sir. Because that is not my issue. There's nothing that I could do about it. So it's a big topic for me. I cannot wait to get into that next week about please understand all the types of insurances. Please stay on top of your beneficiaries. Please know, you know, even after divorce, if there's certain things that are mandated in the divorce decree, there, you know, like I said, we're going to save that for next week, but it's going to get deep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. So the biggest thing, and once again, we're going back to April, is Financial Literacy Month.
Yes.
You need to know information. If you don't know, it's just like this show, Google, ask. You got to find out because it's so important for you to know these things, because once it's over, once the situation has happened, you can't go back. You can't, you just can't correct it afterwards. It's going to be hard. And I've seen people go through that, definitely have gone through that of wasn't theirs. But even having people signing your name, I mean, that's straight out fraud, you know.
Oh my
but
goodness.
It's really, really difficult.
I've got so many stories. I'm like, oh my goodness.
I don't even want to tell my own stories. I have to tell other people's stories because it's not that personal because I'm not giving out their name. But, right. I mean, it's like when someone says you owe taxes or something, did I receive money? I don't think so.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
I was just talking with a couple who, after divorce, she's remarried. Her child is from the first marriage. The
mm-hmm.
father signed the son's name on some credit cards. And, oh, my gosh. So
wow.
It was a shock to me because sometimes, you know, you still can't believe that something like that is even possible or that someone
mm-hmm.
would even do that to their child because the boy was no more than about 6 or 7 years old.
Yes.
So
I've seen that.
Are you kidding? Don't they know how old? Do they think that a 6-year-old is spending $100,000 on a credit card? Really?
That's
a whole. We're gonna have to have you on clearly. Or what we'll do is we'll do something on Spreecast where we can talk on video and talk
mm-hmm.
about situations that people get into and how they could be helped by being more knowledgeable about credit, who can sign things, how to fight them, and so on and so on and so on. This hour went so quickly, which I expected it, because it always does when we have good conversations about anything.
Yes.
But I'm so happy that you were on. Let's tell everyone how they can find you on Facebook, on Twitter, on, you know, all the places that they could find you if they have questions for you, if they'd like to, you know, visit anything about you, any type of event that you'll be at. Talk to us about that.
Well, my joke is if you can't find me, you're not on planet Earth anymore because and my name is Tara Colquitt, but I am the Credit Woman. So on my Facebook fan page is The Credit Woman,
mm-hmm.
Twitter, The Credit Woman,
mm-hmm.
website, thecreditwoman.com, email address, thecreditwoman@gmail.com, Instagram, The Credit Woman. I think I even have a Pinterest, but I'm not even sure what that is. Just remember, The Credit Woman, if you Google that, you will find me. And I'm happy to answer people's questions. Please look at my website. And one thing I would like to say, and this is really beautiful, because in March, which was Credit Education Month, I put out a lot of information and tips, and I had people contact me and say, thank you so much, I'm improving my credit. These are not clients.
Mm-hmm.
I'm improving my credit because I think the information is so important, and if you need more help, I am more than willing to help you for a fee, but it's still just knowing the information of what you need to do. So
yes, and it's
so absolutely
important for
everyone to do that.
And the fee actually might be a tax write-off. Who knows? So
hey, I got to talk to my accountant about that. That's a good one.
That's right. I believe that fee just might be a tax write-off. Shoot, it's education. I'm willing to write off
education. That's it. I am going to go out and have a whole new marketing campaign.
That's right.
You're going to bring your taxes.
That's right. I'm so happy to also say that Tara was a part of a giveaway that we did where she gave away 1 year of credit counseling to one of our winners, and I can't wait to check up on that to see how that's going and to talk about the end and get to the end of that and talk about how you changed this person's life, because I am certain that you are changing this person's life. I'm so grateful to you for doing that, for being a part of that contest. I can't tell you how much I really, really appreciate you.
It was wonderful.
Yes. So, again, we will talk again. We will figure out a date to do something, whether it's a Twitter chat or a Spreecast or both, who knows. But we're definitely going to talk more about this subject because there's just not enough time to get it all in. So
definitely.
To our listeners, we thank you for listening in tonight about giving credit where credit is due. And right now, credit is due to you. So let's get your credit, right? Let's keep
yes,
things moving.
Let's get it straight. We can
yes.
do it.
Yes, let's grow together. Let's go for it. As you know, we are Bridal Tribe, Tribal Wisdom. We are a company about love, beauty, wedding, and marriage fun. And since this is about Financial Literacy Month and about family, we are having this subject. We're talking about this subject. We're touching on this subject so that we can help families get to where they need to be in real estate, in education, or whatever it is that you choose to use your credit for. And if you would like to be a guest on any of our shows, you know we do have our weekly show, I'm sorry, daily shows now, with the Couples TV. We have Marriage Mentoring, we have Making It Last, we have Tribal Wisdom with me, Cynthia Williamson. We have a number of shows. If you would like to be a part of any of our shows, please do send an email to info@bridaltribe.com. And talk to us. Let us know. We would love to have you. In the meantime, we will talk with you next week about life insurance. We're going to touch on the subject of life insurance and the important ways to handle it. We'll talk to you next week. We love you. Good night.